Welcome to On the Way with Tony Crisp. Each weekday, Dr. Crisp will be discussing biblical passages, people, places, and prophecies. Tune in daily to start your day right and deepen your understanding of how to better walk the way and enjoy the journey. Here's your host, Dr. Tony Crisp.
Welcome to On the Way. This is Tony Crisp, and this is Podcast 1067. As we make our way through the entire Old Testament, dividing it into 10 time periods, we have come through many periods, and we just finished the period of the single kingdom. Now we come to the period of exile. This is a major turning point in the life of the nation of Israel. It is a major turning point in world history. It is a major turning point in biblical prophecy, and God is the true and living God, and He prophesies things before they ever happen. And this is one way that you know that a prophet is truly of God, is if every prophecy comes to fulfillment. That's right. If you claim to be a prophet of God, you can't miss it one time. And this is exactly what Isaiah prophesied would happen. This is exactly what Jeremiah prophesied would happen. And the length of time of the exile was prophesied by Jeremiah. It would be 70 years. You see, the people of God had so forsaken the Lord down through the centuries from the time they entered in the land of Canaan, that God said, you have taken the sabbatical years. You see, not only did God give a Sabbath to the people every week, but every 7 years, God said, I want the land to rest. I want crop rotation. I want you to let the land lay fallow for an entire year. And He said, I will supernaturally give you in the sixth year enough of a bumper crop to do you until the harvest of the eighth year. Now, does this sound familiar? This is the way that God does it. Whatever God tells us to do, He has already provided whatever it is that He has commanded us to do. This is like God saying to the people when they were in the wilderness, I'm going to give you manna every day. But on the seventh day, I don't want you going out. I don't want you expecting manna to be there, because every week there's going to be a miracle. For 6 days, I'm going to provide just what you need. If you try to hold it over for one day and you don't go out the next day, you're going to coast through the next day. You're going to get worms and maggots in your house. It's not going to work like that. I want you to trust me every day for your daily bread. And then on Friday, what we call Friday, on the sixth day, I'm going to give you again a bumper day, enough to do you until the eighth day, and that is the beginning of the next week. And so that's exactly what God did. Supernaturally, on the sixth day, God gave them double, so that they could go out on the sixth day and harvest enough manna on that day in the morning so that it would do them until the beginning of the next week, or the eighth day, or the first day of the next week. And so God said about the sabbatical year, I'll do the same thing. In the sixth year, I'll give you a bumper crop to where you'll have enough to do you all the way through the seventh year, all the way into the harvest of the eighth year. But did the people listen? Absolutely not. And so they missed, listen to this, 70 sabbatical years. You say, well, who's counting? God is. He always is. And this is exactly why they had 70 years of captivity. God said, for 70 years, there's not going to be any harvesting of my land, because you didn't give it, I'm going to take it. And that's the way it is always in our lives concerning time, treasure, talents, abilities. You see, God owns everything. He owns us. It's just a matter of whether we're going to acknowledge that and give our lives to Him and serve Him. Now, you warriors who are out there, please listen to me. Those of you who have a lot of money who are listening, those of you who have so much that you can't give as other people give, You can't just give 10%. Why? Because you've been blessed beyond measure. And so you need to bless the Lord in his work 1,000 times over. Why? Because you've been blessed 1,000 times over more than others. To whom much is given, much shall be required. That's knowledge. That's ability. That's treasure. That's time. That's talent. You just name it, God gives it. There is nothing good that we have that God hasn't given us. And so God says, you can either give it or I'll take it. You say, well, that sounds cruel. Oh, no, 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 no. If you're a father, you understand this. If I went and bought a box of chocolates and I bought a box of chocolates that had 10 big, big candy bars in it, and I said to my son or my daughter, hey, honey, would you give one of those to me so I could take it with me on my trip so I could just eat it and think of you and how blessed you are and how much I love you? What if that person, that son, that daughter that I love would say something like that to me? Well, the obvious is in your mind right now. You would say, well, they wouldn't get any more. Right. Or I would just take away what they have. Well, God may do that because, you see, he's sovereign. He can do whatever he wants to, and he'll always do the right thing. And so we can trust a loving, holy, righteous God who never makes a mistake. Well, enough of that. You get the idea, 70 years. So here is what happened. God sent Nebuchadnezzar against the Assyrians. God had warned them. They had repented. God had spared them, but then they got haughty, prideful, and they were wicked. They were a cruel people, and they became more and more wicked, and God said, that's enough. And so he sent Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar's father, and Nebuchadnezzar, and they routed Nineveh in 612. Then in 605, there was a remnant of those who had escaped from the fall of Nineveh, and they fled south to Carchemish, which is in northern Syria, that area. Pharaoh Necho II from Egypt, he came north. Remember, this is talked about in the Samuel Kings and Chronicles material. You remember godly King Josiah? He died going out, meddling in something that wasn't his business, and that's exactly what happened. He died at Megiddo, as you remember. That's where he fought and was killed there. And Pharaoh Necho went on north, and he was aligned with the remnants of the Assyrian kingdom. And Nebuchadnezzar at this time in 605, at that battle, he had the Medes and the Persians with him and others that he had conquered, and they totally destroyed any of the remnant of the Assyrians. Pharaoh Necho was soundly defeated. And by the way, from a historical standpoint, a secular standpoint, this was the last of Egyptian intervention to the north in the Near East, or what we now call the Middle East. And so Egypt was pretty much defeated after that, and they didn't raise their head again in any significant way until much later in history. And so after Nebuchadnezzar had defeated Pharaoh Necho and the Assyrians at the Battle of Carchemish, and that kingdom was conquered and defeated, then he just made his way down from the north to Jerusalem. He swung by without taking the city, without any resistance. He, in 605, took away captive all the blue bloods and all the educated and all of those who were part of the royal family. That was in 605 BC, and he took them to Babylon. That was his way of doing it. Remember, the Assyrians scattered people all over the face of the earth and then brought in others so that there would be great trouble in getting together people from different language groups and different cultures. It'd take a while for them to get together and form a rebellion. So that was their policy and their strategy. That is the Assyrians. Now, the Babylonians said, no, we'll bring everyone to Mesopotamia. And that's what they did. And in this first wave, there were three waves of this exile, of this captivity, and the destruction of Jerusalem. The destruction of Jerusalem was in the third phase, but this time everyone was taken that would be used in the kingdom in a strategic way. So Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, they were taken away, along with many others. The reason I named them is because they were prominent in the kingdom work of Babylon, and you can read about that in the book of Daniel. It is a chronicle of what went on there, and Daniel lived to be close to 100 years old, and he served throughout the kingdom, and God blessed him and raised him up. While this was going on, King Nebuchadnezzar said, like my dad used to say before he went away, he used to say to us boys wrestling in the back seat, he'd say, "Don't make me have to get back in that back seat." And I always had the idea of daddy crawling over the back seat. That would have been horrible for us. He would say, "Don't make me have to stop this car." Well, I can just hear Nebuchadnezzar saying, "Don't make me have to come back over here." But sure enough, he set up a puppet king, and that didn't last long. 597, he had to come back in. Less than 10 years, he had to come back in. And this time, he just about cleaned house. All he left behind was what he called the offscouring. He left behind the rabble. But this time, he took Ezekiel. First time, in 605, he took Daniel and the blue bloods, and now he's taken Ezekiel. So Daniel was in the palace and in the province of Babylon, along with his three friends, and Ezekiel was in the land between the rivers, the Mesopotamia. He was on a man-made canal, a river called the River Kibar, and that's where he did his prophecy. So he was out there with the common people. Now think about this. God always has someone in the palace, and God always has someone with the people, the common people. God is never without a witness. He always has someone. Ask Elijah about that. We can talk to him about that when we get to heaven. You see, Elijah thought he was the only one that was really serving God, and he ran away, cowered after his great monumental victory on Mount Carmel when he said, "How long will you halt between two opinions? How long will you vacillate between two opinions? If God is God, like my name says, Eliyah, my God is Yah. If he is God, let's serve him. If not, then let's serve Baal if he's God." And so he called the people to repentance, and you remember the great victory there. And then it wasn't even 2 days until he was running from a woman. He ran out into the desert, sat under a juniper tree, and said, "God, kill me. I'm the only one that's faithfully serving you." How many times I talk to men and women, especially men and pastors and those in leadership, "Oh, I'm the only one around here that's really serving God. Oh, bless my heart." Well, listen, you're not. God said, "Elijah, get up from off your face." He gave him rest. He gave him food. He gave him rest. He gave him food. And then he said, "Elijah, you're not the only one serving the Lord. I have 7,000 in Israel that has not bowed the knee to Baal. And so you get up from off your face and get on with the work. I've got more work for you to do, and I'm going to take you out in a mighty way." And he did. And so I want you to understand that God had a man in the palace. He had people in the palace. He had people out there with the common people. And back in Jerusalem, Jeremiah was buying fields and warning people of the time to come. As a matter of fact, the king didn't like it, and so he put him in a cistern in a well. He took everything away from Jeremiah, but Jeremiah was faithful to God. And sure enough, when Nebuchadnezzar came back in 586, it's horrible to think, but he took everything from all the gold and silver and all of the things, that beautiful temple that Solomon had made worth $1 billion in our money today, took that away to Babylon. Jeremiah was left there. Now, it's interesting. I want just from a historical note tell you why I believe that Jeremiah was left behind, besides just the mission that God had for him, just from a human sociological standpoint. Remember where he was from. He was from Anathoth, and that is at the gates of Shaul today. That is where the tribe of Benjamin's land begins in Samaria. There's the village of Anathoth. Now, you'll remember that there were two different priests that served David, Zadok and Abiathar. We call him Abiathar. And you'll recall that when the coronation of Solomon took place, that it was Zadok. But the other priest was faithful to Adonijah with Joab, the general, the chief of staff of King David. And when David died and Solomon came to power, he banished Abiathar to Anathoth. He said, I would kill you, but you've carried the ark of the Lord before my father, and I'm not going to do it. And he blessed Zadok and made him the high priest, of course, and Abiathar was put out to his village. And so he was looked upon as a reject, and that village was of his lineage and his people. Lo and behold, that is the place where Jeremiah came from. So that was part of the rejects. Now, who was it that was left behind in the first phase and the second phase? It was the rejects. And so I believe that's the human reason why he was not taken. Now, is God sovereign and he can see all that? Of course. You see, it's no accident you were brought up as you were brought up. It's no accident that I was brought up as I was brought up. It's no accident that God takes, according to the book of 1 Corinthians, the rejects, the discards, those who are not of noble birth. The word is eugenics there in the Greek text. We'll get to that in 1 Corinthians. But it means not good DNA. That's right, eugenics, genes, has to do with the genes. EU means good. Well, it means you're not of good genes. That means you don't have the best DNA. You're not the smartest. You're not the brightest. Now, isn't it fascinating that God uses rejects, that God uses what other people would call the scum of the earth, discards of society and social order? Oh, my. I can remember the ladies of the city, the little town that I grew up in. I would go to the grocery store and they'd all be sitting there and they'd be talking or standing around. You see, when you're poor, they also think you're deaf. So I would go on the other side of the aisle, just on the other side of the aisle where they couldn't see me. And I'd hear them say, there goes that little Tony Crisp. He's mean as a striped snake. He's never going to amount to a hill of beans. He's never going to amount to a hill of beans. I heard that over and over again. Well, do you know that God is in the business of taking rejects and discards and failures and social rejects and doing something with them because he's God? And he goes on to say in 1 Corinthians 1 that the reason he does that is so that he will get the glory. You see, nobody's going to look at Tony Crisp and say, boy, he came out of that cream of the crop. He was born with a golden spoon in his mouth. Why, no wonder he made it. He was so smart and he was such a good boy. I can guarantee they said a lot of things about me, but they didn't say anything like that. Now, why am I telling you that? It's because God is even sovereign in bad times. God knows what he's doing. And so this captivity lasted all the way down to 539, this period of the exile. And that's when Cyrus, the Persian king that Isaiah had talked about more than a century before, he had prophesied that indeed Cyrus by name would be called up and he would be called the Mashiach, the Messiah, the anointed one. God had anointed him for a particular task. And that's exactly what he did. He let the people go back to where they came from and said, when you build that temple, I'll pay for it, but I have one condition. Pray for me when you get it built and pray for the success of the Persian kingdom. And so that's what happened. And so he let the people go home. He conquered Babylon in 539. In 538, just a year later, he said, all of you people go back home and I'll build your temple. Here's the money for it. Took them 3 years to get back there. About 50,000 of them went back. That's all that went back because the rest of them were comfortable doing what Jeremiah said. You assimilate into the culture there and you pray for the prosperity of the city and the kingdom because that's the way you'll prosper. And sure enough, that's what happened. 50,000 or so came back and they gathered together, laid the foundation of the temple. Then for 14 years, there was opposition. It discouraged them. They didn't build until God sent a fiery prophet by the name of Haggai and Zechariah. You can read about their call to repentance and to get back to building and finishing the work of God. And that took 4 years. In 516, the second temple, called Zerubbabel's temple, was dedicated. And so from 586 to 516, exactly 70 years, just like God said, the people were in exile. They did not have a central worship center in Jerusalem, but God is faithful, and he brought them back. For On the Way, this is Tony Crisp.
Thanks for listening to On the Way with Tony Crisp. Tune in every weekday for information on biblical passages, people, places, and prophecies. Fridays are for your questions. Email your questions to questions@tonycrisp.org. Then just listen for your question to be answered on Friday's podcast. That's questions at tonycrisp.org. Thanks for listening and have a blessed day on the way.